Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for December 2012. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but it is my hope that it will be of some interest to all who hear it. December again. It's hard to realize that this year is rapidly coming to a close, and I hope it's been a good year for you. As with most of us, any year is generally filled with highs and lows, but the optimists among us feel the highs outweigh the lows, and we look back on this year in a positive manner. Now back to our subject matter, food, health, and related subjects. Have you heard that the grilled cheese sandwiches are making a comeback? Perhaps in your home they never were abandoned. A food writer for the Kansas City Star newspaper says this is a cheesy story about the resurgence of a favored grilled sandwich. Most of us have fond memories of the classic our mothers used to make, a slice of American cheese melted between two slices of white bread. Margarine, not butter, was the grease of choice for a crisp exterior. The results were always so warm and comforting, as might well have been imprinted on our DNA. Wait, do you need a recipe? The truth is, he added, I feel a bit silly looking for a recipe. I mean, who on earth, okay, this country at least, doesn't know how to make a grilled cheese sandwich? Then I found a recipe for bachelor grilled cheese. Pop two slices of white bread into a toaster oven, brown, insert two slices of cheese, wrap the sandwich in a paper towel and microwave for 15 to 20 seconds until the cheese is melted. It's not hard to butter bread and cook it in a pan on the stove. Still, fans of the bachelor recipe rate it very high with an 8 out of a possible 10. We who eat grilled cheese in the comfort of our own homes, if we're going to get this economy pumping again, so some clever chefs are trying to lure us out the door with, you guessed it, lots of melted cheese. From the American Grilled Cheese Kitchen in San Francisco to Cheese Boy in Boston, and in between Feel Good in Austin, Texas, grilled cheese restaurants are hot. Why should chefs feel compelled to put their stamp on the simple Simon of sandwiches? Uncomplicated foods can elicit some of the greatest debate, according to Laura Whirlin, a cheese expert and author of Grilled Cheese, Please. Should you use cheese slices or grated cheese? Thick or thin bread? Butter or margarine? Mustard or mayo? Olive oil or vegetable oil? Salt or no salt? An additional filling or just a combination of cheeses? Thanks to a steady supply of artisanal breads and farmstead cheese, Americans are clearly ripe for more of the subject. Grilled cheese, the movement has arrived. My wife makes a great grilled cheese sandwich using our George Foreman grill. We use whole wheat bread and vary the cheese from time to time. Now here are some guidelines for great grilled cheese from Laura Whirlin's book. Grate the cheese. It melts better. Thick cheese and thin bread is the best ratio. Spread the butter on the bread, not on the pan. It's best to use a nonstick skillet. Flatten slightly with a spatula while grilling. Cool it and then eat it. It's a simple step that avoids molten cheese that burns your mouth and allows the flavor to develop. How often do you roast a chicken? According to Andrea Weigel, the News and Observer's food editor, a roasted chicken on Sunday night can be a meal-end meal, a weekend meal saver. Now that it's cooler and heating up, the kitchen isn't such a problem. Roasting a chicken or two, depending on your family size, can make the start of the work week easier on the family cook. The leftover meat can be turned into soups, salads, casseroles, and even tacos. Better yet, these dishes are easy to assemble. Leftover roast chicken will keep for 3 or 4 days in the refrigerator and can easily be turned into two more meals. I love the concept of just making it to Wednesday, said Hunter Lewis, Southern Living Magazine's food editor. Another food editor says, I don't let a chicken go to waste. I'll extract out of one or two birds, one meal, another meal, a soup, and some nice broth. The broth can be frozen to use as chicken stock at a later time. Do you have small children in your family who sees their teeth being brushed? Who sees their teeth are brushed? For example, in the surgical wing of the Center for Pediatric Dentistry at Seattle's Children's Hospital, Devin Koster, 2.5 years old, was resting in his mother's arms as an anesthesiologist placed a bubblegum-scented mask over his face to put him under. The doctors then took x-rays, which showed that 11 of his 20 baby teeth had cavities. His pediatric dentist extracted two incisors, performed a root canal on a molar, and gave the rest of his teeth fillings and crowns. Devin's mother, Melody Kester, a homemaker, and her husband, Matthew, an information technology manager, said they began to worry about brushing Devin's teeth only after Melody noticed they were discolored when he was 18 months old. I had a lot on my mind, and brushing his teeth was an extra thing I didn't think about at night. The number of preschoolers requiring extensive dental care suggests that many other parents make the same mistake. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention noted an increase, the first in 40 years, in the number of preschoolers with cavities in the study 5 years ago. Dentists nationwide say they're seeing more preschoolers at all income levels with 6 to 10 cavities or more. The level of decay is so severe that they often recommend using general anesthesia because young children are unlikely to sit through such extensive procedures when they're awake. Pediatric dentists and public health dentists have seen a rising trend in childhood tooth decay for some time now, said Dr. Ron Vanzizi of Apex. Before entering private practice in 2004, he spent 7 years working for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services in dental programs. Adds Dr. Martha Ann Keels, associate professor of surgery and pediatrics at Duke's Children's Hospital in Durham. We're seeing more and more cases of young children ages 3 to 5 with what we call the 8 chewing cavities, which means cavities between all back 8 back molars and on top of all of the back molars. We're treating at least 5 children per week in the operating room at Duke with significant tooth decay, says Dr. Keels. While we always will see a bit of early childhood cavities in our practice, we have also seen an increase in the severity of the disease, says Dr. Margaret Lockery, a Charlotte dentist and spokeswoman for the American Academy of Pediatric Dentists. Dentists offer a number of reasons so many preschoolers suffer from such extensive tooth decay: endless snacking and juice or other sweet drinks at bedtime, parents who choose bottled water rather than fluorinated tap water for their children, and a lack of awareness that infants should, according to pediatric experts, visit a dentist by age 1 to be assessed for future cavity risk, even though they may have only a few teeth. Keel says soft, sticky foods, gummies, gummy vitamins, cereal bars, granola bars, Skittles, Starbursts, fruit chews, fruit roll-ups, raisins, and craisins are especially problematic. And because some toddlers dislike toothbrushing, some parents do not enforce it. Let's say a child is 1.5 years, and the child screams when they get their teeth cleaned, said Dr. Jed Best, a pediatric dentist in New York. Some parents say, I don't want my little darling to be traumatized. The metaphor I give them is this: I'd much rather have a kid cry with a soft toothbrush than when I drill a cavity. Exercising good oral health care early on is important, says Keel of Duke. There are 20 baby teeth. 12 of those 20 should last until age 10 or 12, and they're very important space holders for the adult teeth. If you lose a baby tooth prematurely, then you are potentially creating a crowding problem for the adult set, not to mention how sad it is to have your child missing teeth in their smile. One of the hidden sources of sugar could well be your child's cereal bowl. Some of the cereals that appeal to youngsters contain as much sugar as candy. Many of the cereal makers advertise them as being made from whole grains. That sounds good, but please read the labels for information about how much sugar that cereal contains. Choosy moms and dads may pack more peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in lunches this year when the cost of a jar of Jif or Skippy is expected to fall, even though other grocery prices rise. Peanut butter prices soared last year after the drought and high heat in the southeast where most peanuts were grown. This year, that region got a break, while farmers in most of the rest of the country suffered huge losses in the widest drought in decades. Farmers are now expected to bring in 2/3 more peanuts than they did in 2011, and that could mean a price drop in the grocery store. After last year's small crop, we saw peanut butter prices on average rise 30% or more, said Patrick Archer, the president of the American Peanut Council. With this year's excellent crop, the supply and demand should come back into balance, and retail peanut butter prices should come back to a more normal level. A 10% decrease on a $3 jar of peanut butter, for example, would translate to a saving of 30 cents. That may not seem like much, but the impact is greater for food banks and other big buyers. Bill Bowling, founder and executive director of the Atlanta Community Food Banks, say food banks usually must buy protein-rich items like peanut butter, beans, and meat. His organization buys anywhere from 200,000 to 400,000 pounds of peanut butter each year, depending on the price. If costs go down 10% or 20%, we can buy that much more product, Bowling says. Bowling says peanut butter is one of the most popular items at a food bank because children like it. It's high in protein and has a long shelf life. Peanuts are already considered a staple of the American diet. The average U.S. consumer eats about 6 pounds of peanut butter and other peanut products each year, according to estimates from the American Peanut Council, an industry trade group. But peanut butter could become more attractive as strong global demand, high prices for livestock feed, and a huge sell-off of cattle and other animals in the drought areas keep pushing up meat prices. U.S. farmers are expected to produce more than 3 million tons of peanuts in 2012, according to figures released in October by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's a 66% increase over 2011, when growers produced more than 1.8 million tons. Experts say several factors created the perfect conditions for a banner year. High peanut prices after last year's small crop encouraged farmers to plant more. The USDA figures show acreage is up nearly 50% in 2012 compared with the year earlier. Farmers in the Southeast also got a break in the weather. Spring came early, allowing them to plant sooner. Temperatures were generally milder, and thunderstorms in August and September provided much-needed relief in the weeks before farmers began the peanut harvest. Experts also say a peanut variety developed in recent years is boosting the record yields, in part because it tends to be resistant to disease. Don Kohler, executive director of the Georgia Peanut Commission, said, "In this South Georgia area, we probably have had as good a growing season as I can remember in a long time, and maybe in my 26 years as executive director. Georgia produces more peanuts by far than any other state, though the legumes are grown in sandy soil from Mississippi to Florida and north to the Carolinas and Virginia. I like both roasted peanuts and peanut butter and feel that I eat my 6 pounds per person and part of someone else's share." While conditions for growing some crops are better this year, other crops face problems from an unexpected source. People tend to think of ozone as something in the upper atmosphere that protects the Earth's surface from ultraviolet radiation. At ground level, ozone is a pollutant that damages crops, particularly soybeans. Lisa Ainsworth, a University of Illinois Associate Professor of Crop Science and USDA Agriculture Research Service plant molecular biologist, said that establishing the exposure threshold for damage is critical to understanding the current and future impact of this pollutant. Ozone is highly reactive and harms plants, slowing photosynthesis and accelerating senescence, which reduces yield. Ainsworth's team investigated the responses of 7 different soybean genotypes to 8 ozone concentration. The plants were exposed to ozone concentration ranging from ambient levels of 38 parts per billion up to 200 parts per billion. This is quite high, but unfortunately, those kinds of concentration are what very polluted areas of China and India are looking at today, Ainsworth said. Researchers found that any increase above the ambient concentration was enough to reduce yield roughly 0.5 bushel per acre for each additional part per billion. This research was recently published online in Plants Physiology. Does an organic strawberry contain more vitamin C than a conventional one? Maybe or maybe not. Stanford University science have weighed in on the maybe not side of the debate after extensive examination of 4 decades of research comparing organic and conventional foods. They concluded that fruits and vegetables labeled organic were, on average, no more nutritious than their counterparts, which tend to be far less expensive, nor were they any less likely to be contaminated by dangerous bacteria like E. coli. Conventional fruits and Vegetables did have more pesticide residue, but the levels are almost always under the allowed safety limits, the scientists said. The Environmental Protection Agency set the limits at levels it said do no harm to humans. When we began this project, we thought there would be likely to be some findings that would support the superiority of organics over conventional foods, said Dr. Dina Bravada, a senior affiliate with Stanford's Center for Health Policy and the senior author of this report that was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. I think we were definitely surprised. These findings seem unlikely to sway many fans of organic food. Advocates for organic farming say the Stanford researchers failed to appreciate the differences they did find between the two types of food, differences that validate the reasons usually cited for buying organic. Organic produce, as expected, was much less likely to retain traces of pesticides. Organic chicken and pork are less likely to be contaminated by antibiotic-resisting bacteria. Another study says vitamins do not lower heart risk in men. Multivitamins might not help lower the risk for cancer in healthy older men, but do not affect their chances of developing heart disease, new research suggests. Two other studies found that fish oil didn't work for irregular heartbeat condition called atrial fibrillation, even though it is thought to help people with heart disease or high levels of fats called triglycerides in their body. The bottom line, dietary supplements have varied effects, and whether one is right for you may depend on your personal health profile, diet, and lifestyle. Many people take vitamins as a crutch, said study leader Dr. Sisso of Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. There is no substitute for a heart-healthy diet, exercising, not smoking, keeping your weight down, especially for lowering heart risk. These studies were presented by the American Heart Association. A separate analysis released in connection with the study shows that at least one in three baby boomers who are in good shape will eventually develop heart problems or have a stroke. The upside is that will happen about 7 years later than for their less healthy peers. The findings came in an analysis of five major studies involving nearly 50,000 adults ages 45 and older who were followed up to 50 years. The research was published online by the Journal of the American Medical Association along with the vitamin study and one fish oil study. Multivitamins are America's favorite dietary supplement. About one-third of the adults take them. Yet no government agency recommends their routine use for preventing chronic diseases, and few studies have tested them to see if they can. A leading preservative medicine task force recommends against beta-carotene supplements alone or with other vitamins to prevent cancer or heart disease because some studies have found them harmful. And vitamin K can affect bleeding and interfere with some commonly used heart drugs. Sesso's study involved nearly 15,000 healthy male doctors giving monthly packets of Centrum Silver or fake multivitamins. After about 11 years, there was no difference between the groups in heart attacks, strokes, chest pain, heart failure, or heart-related deaths. Side effects were fairly similar except for more rashes among the vitamin users. The National Institute of Health paid for most of the study. Pfizer Incorporated supplied the pills and other companies supplied the packaging. The same study a few weeks ago found that multivitamins cut the chance of developing cancer by 8%, a modest amount unless that what can be achieved from a good diet, exercise, and not smoking. Are you aware that when you were born might have a relationship to the amount of your grocery bill? A study by Consumer Reports reveals that folks born before 1946 tend to spend less for groceries than their children and grandchildren. The group called millennials, those born after 1981, were very frugal spending, less than their ancestors who were born from 1946 to 1980. These facts were presented in the issue of Consumer Reports that looked at the best and worst supermarkets in our country. In general, almost everyone had some complaints about the supermarket they shopped at. One-third of the people who had filled in their annual questionnaire for the 2011 had changed their grocery store for a number of reasons. The most changed looking for lower prices. Others were dissatisfied with the selection of items available. Long lines at the checkout were high on the list of complaints. Rudeness of clerks, cluttered aisles, advertised specials out of stock, inept bagging of groceries, and scanner overcharges were other complaints. Even the stores that scored as highest in this study were guilty of some of these complaints. How does your supermarket compare? With the downturn in our economy, many of us have discovered that a supermarket's private label merchandise is of excellent quality at a lower price per unit than many of the nationally advertised brands. Again, it's time to read the labels to determine which items to buy. Regardless of what a grocery company does, it is sometimes necessary to close an existing store. And the Kroger Company has recently announced the closing of two Raleigh stores. The company said in a news release that the stores were losing money. Due to lowering financial returns, the difficult decision was made to close the locations in an effort to maintain the grocer's commitment to low prices and quality food products for customers across North Carolina, the release said. Although Kroger has continued to use its resources to improve each location, both have been unprofitable for the company. The two stores employed 196 people. The workforce is unionized, and some workers may find jobs at Kroger's remaining 14 locations in the Triangle, said Carl York, the advertising and public relations manager for the company's Mid-Atlantic region. York said Kroger had no plans to close any of its other stores in the Triangle, the only North Carolina market where it operates. The Cincinnati-based company has expanded in other parts of the country, but York said there are no plans to add stores here at the moment. Certainly the market is an outstanding market, and we need to get our base there strong so we continue to invest, he said, of the Triangle. Walmart plans to open a Walmart Express in Rollsville as it continues to use North Carolina as its primary test market for its smaller store concept. The retailer has a contract to purchase land at the corner of Rogers Road and Grand Rock Way, according to developer Hal Perry, who is a part of a group that owns the property. A preliminary concept plan of the project submitted to Rollsville shows a 12,000-square-foot store and 8 fueling docks. A Walmart spokesman said the company had nothing to announce related to Rollsville. Thomas Lloyd, Rollsville's planning director, said he expects the company to submit more detailed architectural drawings very shortly. The project will require Walmart to get a special use permit and have the land rezoned, he said. The Walmart Express stores are typically less than one-tenth the size of the company's massive supercenters, which can be 200,000 square feet or larger. The stores sell about 15,000 items compared to more than 100,000 offered in a supercenter. Express stores offer many of the same products at the same prices as the larger stores, including groceries. A Walmart Express employs between 20 and 25 people. Walmart has been opening express stores, in which is widely viewed by analysts as an attempt to capture market share from dollar stores such as Family Dollar and Dollar General, and drug stores such as CVS and Walgreens. Of the 10 express stores to open so far, 5 are in North Carolina. 2 more are scheduled to open soon in Carthage and Liberty. They've announced plans to build 8 more express stores in the state in Pikeville, Stedman, Red Springs, Four Oaks, Benson, Eastover, Kenley, and Bailey. The Rollsville store will be just down the block from a CVS. It's also near where a new 72-unit affordable housing project, Granite Falls Apartments, is slated to be built. The project is expected to begin construction in January and open in early 2014. Granite Falls is a part of a cluster of communities that Perry began developing in northern Wake County town in the early part of the last decade. Wells Fargo recently foreclosed on roughly 90 acres in the developments, which offered as new home construction fell off dramatically following the housing bust. Now here's the story on a new study concerning coffee. Certainly coffee seems to be one of the most tested foods we know of. Scientists in Norway have more good news for coffee drinkers. Research has found evidence that the drink, or the beans it's brewed from, can help with weight loss, reducing one's risk of developing Alzheimer's disease or dementia, boost muscle growth, protect against certain types of cancers, and even reduce one's risk of premature death, among many other benefits. Now word comes that a cup of Joe reduces physical pain. The surprising finding is based on a study involving 48 volunteers who agreed to spend 90 minutes performing fake computer tasks meant to mimic office work. The tests were known to cause pain in the shoulders, neck, forearms, and wrists. The researchers wanted to compare how people with chronic pain and those who were pain-free tolerated the tests. As a matter of convenience, the scientists allowed people to drink coffee before taking the test to avoid unpleasant effects of caffeine deprivation. Examples: decreased vigor and alertness, sleepiness, and fatigue, they reported. But when it came time to analyze the data, the researchers for Norway's National Institute of Occupational Health and Oslo University Hospital noticed that the 19 people who drank coffee reported a lower intensity of pain than the 29 people who didn't, regardless of whether the chronic subjects had chronic pain or not. The authors of the study, published in the journal BMC Research Notes, cautioned that since the study wasn't designed to test coffee's influence on pain, the results come from many uncertainties. For starters, the researchers didn't know how much coffee the coffee drinkers consumed before taking the computer test. All we coffee drinkers can say is, hooray for our side. We who enjoy hard winter squashes know it is often difficult to prepare them for cooking, and this may help. In another of those letters to a food editor, this question is asked. Now that the winter squash season is here, what's the trick to peeling butternut or spaghetti squashes? They're so hard, I don't know how to use them. The answer: after hiding all that flavor and those nutrients inside them, nature certainly didn't make hard-shelled squashes easy to open. You could keep one of those pumpkin carving kits around. That saw blade could help open a winter squash. But an easier way to tackle the hard but smooth skin winter squashes is to start with a microwave oven. Using a metal skewer, a strong fork, or the tip of a small paring knife, poke several holes through the skin. Then put in the microwave for about 3 minutes. That will soften the skin a little, so it'll be easier to cut in half for roasting or to use a vegetable peeler to remove the skin and dice the squash. A spaghetti squash can be poked and microwaved in the same manner. Instead of peeling it, though, cut it in half, scrape up the seeds, and either bake or steam the halves until it's soft enough to use a fork to release the long strands. Berries are good for the brain, according to a study that suggests fruits can help fend off the mental decline of age. Women who ate one or more servings of blueberries or two or more servings of strawberries a week over a 2-decade had minds that, based on memory tests, were 2.5 years younger than those who ate few to no berries, according to research that was published in the Annals of Neurology. Blueberries and strawberries are rich in a type of flavonoid called anthocyanins, which are known to cross from the blood into the brain and locate in parts developing learning and memory, said lead study author Elizabeth DeVore. The author said that the improved memory may also be the result of life choices like exercising more. Women in the study consumed the most berries also had higher levels of physical activity and annual incomes. I like berries. At this time of the year, we at the Triangle Radio Reading Service want to wish all of you a special holiday greeting. With all the tension that comes from trying to do too much, take a few moments and reflect on the joyous moments you've shared with others during this year. Until we meet again next year, may God bless you. This has been Bob Kruger with Thought for Food.